down now. There's mean things happening. Now, 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 now. There's mean things happening. Now, 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 now. There's mean things happening. Now, 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 now. There's mean things happening.
And that was Blackfire off of their CD, the Woody Guthrie singles. That was Mean Things Happening, of course. Awesome music.
Our listeners are well familiar with that song.
Oh, I'm sure. They should be. I play it enough.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have Ward in the house.
Oh, yeah, turn on his mic there.
I guess it would help if I turned on his mic.
He can say,
do I have a mic?
Yeah, oh, there you go.
You're on. You're live.
It's a bummer coming to a radio station and have no mic.
Yeah, it would be. Mm-hmm. Would be.
It's talk like and talk and get nowhere.
Well, the first thing I want to do is give you a present, Ward.
A present.
Because I thank you for coming to our show. One of the local artists, a guy named Adrian Larvai, is a real good painter. And he does themes in his paintings, and I thought that was one that you might like.
Beautiful piece.
Well, thanks for coming. No problem. Glad to do it.
And no problem coming either. I'd come even without the present. But hey, I'll grab it.
Maybe you'll come back next time.
Do that too.
All right.
Right on. So what brings you to town?
There's an event tonight. I was asked to come, so here I am. Anti-war event of some sort. I don't know exactly what sort because I've not been to one in Portland.
We've got some details here about the event.
We'll go ahead and read this real quick. It's Info Mission Benefit. Learn more about how you can become involved in supporting our youth against militarism. Keynote speaker, Ward Churchill. And resisting imperialist ambitions of the Bush administration at home and in the military. Speakers will begin at 7 p.m. It's at the Mississippi Ballroom, 833 North Shaver Street in North Portland. The doors open at 5:30, and there will be a buffet. And there's a small charge. And let's see. Okay. And I guess that's about it. So
be there.
Okay. Be there.
Yeah, show up.
Yeah.
We'll all find out what it is together.
Yeah.
Good.
I like it. I like it. So how have you been doing?
Doing real well, actually.
Yeah, right on. I have to ask you, having seen you at Reed when you were in town, those questions those guys asked.
They're still asking the same questions. Those guys are cookie cutter cutouts.
Oh, God, I know it. They drive me nuts more than anybody else as far as... You know, the subtle racism that these guys have?
Well, it's not always so subtle.
Well, that's true.
It's always there. Whether it's subtle or not subtle, it's always there. And the negativity all comes from that place. It's this innate sense of privilege and entitlement and self-exemption from responsibility and blah, 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 blah. And it's unbelievable the kind of rationalizations they actually seem to embrace and believe that they cover this shtick with. Get over yourself, okay?
Boy, howdy. Are you still getting flack for your essay?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
I didn't realize it was quite that effective. But, hey, you can measure effectiveness by the degree of flack you take. So I guess I did pretty well with that one. And, hey, I like the kind of criticism I'm getting. Wheat's being separated from chaff here all over the place.
Good. Well, I found that they pulled one line from the entire book and didn't even touch on the real content, the record that you had of the United Nations unable to act because the United States, every time the UN wanted to do something good for some people, the U.S. steps in and votes against it with their veto power.
Well, they don't just vote against it. They just refuse to go along when they lose the vote.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
that's
their
veto power.
There's the obstruction, there's the deformity, but there's the absolute refusal and violation of law as a matter of course. This is the most unlawful nation on the planet today, purporting to be a nation or a government of laws, not men.
Mm-hmm.
Madison Avenue should have come up with that one instead of John Marshall, but then he was a huckster too. So what can I tell you?
Boy, howdy.
But it's a shame because there was so much good research and good information that you put into that book that should have been discussed to some extent by the media, but no, they just want to pull one negative line and that's all they're willing to discuss and to paint you in the worst light possible when I felt that I was really enlightened by the actions of my government that I had no idea the details that go on in the United Nations about all the stuff that they can halt, all the good things the UN wants to do that the United States can just stop.
Well, let's be fair and accurate here. Bill O'Reilly would say that. No spin zone, okay? He's media, I guess.
Right.
But this is media, too, and we are, in fact, talking about it. So you just have to select your media sources a little more carefully, and you actually do find some things out.
Yeah.
Okay? Something beyond JonBenet Ramsey's shoe size and who took the little girl in Utah and Michael Jackson's trial minute by minute and news analysis, including analysis of the news. You notice how they keep doing these roundtables about themselves. Are we oversaturating this? Let's exonerate ourselves, but let's do it in depth and take up 2 hours of airtime.
Yeah, the news is contemporarily be canceled while we discuss what we like to do.
Well, it is a tough job to do 24 hours a day of news broadcasting and never once touch upon the news. I mean, that's a real trick.
Yeah,
and to do it 365 days a year. It's tough.
That's what they get paid the big bucks for.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we don't get paid anything. But
that's right. And we provide more news than they do.
Boy, howdy. We know more about the news than they do.
Well, you can spell it for starters, and that's one of the problems with reading the book, you know. First, you got to be able to read.
Yep, and personally, all the people that went after you, like the, who was it, the Colorado State Legislature that tried to get your tenure removed?
Well, there's attention deficit disorder on a mass scale, okay, you know.
I mean, if they would have read the essay, they would have known that Bill O'Reilly took everything out of context and everything. But none of them, obviously, nobody read the essay.
No,
I don't even think Bill O'Reilly read it. I think he
of course he did not. And you know, the general sensibility in the sectors you're talking about in the Colorado legislature is he's being far too charitable. And let's don't be confused with facts here. Okay, we've got an agenda. That's what politics is all about.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And the idea is to preserve academic integrity and scholarly standards and so forth by absolutely gutting them. All right?
Yep.
We're to have a red, white, and blue block cheering section for whatever it is they decide to do today, and that's the end of it. And beyond that, higher education is a glorified VOTEC. I was saying that at Portland State. Not Portland State. That was Reed College. One of these schools up here in the Northwest.
Reed College. They're all the same.
The whole Clark Kerr thing. But they're dead serious about it. And they may not have read my book, but I think they probably did his, or at least the Cliff Notes version of it. So they got the general drift.
Well, and then my other comment about the book was that I find the AK-47 to be a nice lightweight weapon in the field, but I can't hit anything with it, so...
Well, you want to be close if you're going to use one of those guys. It's not a sniper piece.
It's just rapid fire. You just spray it from the hip, right?
Well, that's the thing. You drop it in the sand, piss on it, freeze the thing in your refrigerator, haul it out, and every time you pull the trigger, you're going to pop a cap, okay?
Yeah.
You can't say about that about these high-tech things the U.S. forces are running around with.
That's right.
If you're going to be close, it's fine. If you're going to be at a long distance, you might want to think about something else. But in any event, that thing, that purely was theater. That was one of my late wife's art projects that the AK guys liked it, so they stuck it on the book cover.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
That's all that was about. Okay. I really wasn't doing any Che Guevara. Well, actually, I was because it was 1960s icon imagery, and there were about three of us who were posing for her and different motifs from the 60s, and I got that particular one.
That was cool. I liked it.
Right on.
Well, it makes a nice image, but that's all it is an image. I'm not going to form any focos. I'm 57 years old. I probably won't be a guerrilla fighter this lifetime anymore, okay?
Yeah, we want to act as nonviolently as possible
that's
in our revolution.
Yeah. I've got the right scent of candle for the vigil, and I've got my spandex, and I've engineered several better bike paths and littered up streets with speed bumps, and I've got a different diet, and you wouldn't believe the musical genre I've perfected, and I read things that nobody else reads, and the world is transformed as a result. That's all about me, okay? That is all about me. And that is transformative vision, boys. We got to get over that. And we'll be talking about that a little bit tonight, too. You're going to get serious about this and be anti-war. That's kind of like being anti-sky. Is there any particular war or form of war or more substantive content you might be against? Okay, I'm against violence, too. But, hey, guess what? My being against it doesn't affect it at all. I'm going to have to actually do something about it. And we need to be talking about what it is we're going to do and how we can do it better than it was done the last time, because I'm old enough to remember the late 60s and the anti-war movement, which is a major chunk of society at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And we're right here confronting the reality that we have to do it again, which means we didn't do it right then.
Yeah.
Okay? So spare me all the rehashed Dave Dillinger rhetoric from the 1960s, because guess what? That didn't stop the Vietnam War. The Vietnamese stopped the Vietnam War. They won it, and they didn't win it with prayer vigils and mass marches.
Now, determination. Determination. Over 3.5 million of them killed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, in a sense.
Oh, you exaggerate. You exaggerate. Where did you get that number? Oh. Are your footnotes correct on that? Yeah. I mean, you're quoting Robert McNamara. Is he a reliable source?
Well, there were only 2 million Indians here at the time of Columbus, too, so.
Oh. Where did you get that inflated number? I got 1.1.
Yeah, that was Kroeber, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Mooney. Kroeber was a little lower. They rounded it off. Nice scientists that they were we'll split the difference, call it a million. Yeah.
Yeah. Good science there.
I want to see their footnotes, hey?
Yeah, I'd like to too.
Fabrication of evidence and distortion of sources.
Pulled out of my ass.com.
Yeah. They wouldn't ask this old Indian how many of you were there. There were a lot. He said, so we'll say a few, because it's just a translation from language to language. It wouldn't be distortion.
Yeah. No. Makes the genocide a little more easy to swallow.
Yeah, especially if you can make it go away altogether, which is the general drill right now. It's a general drill in terms of history, and that translates into the general drill into assessment of the impact of the United States on the planet today. Notice that you got people like Gunter Lewy out there who exonerates the United States of any wrongdoing in Southeast Asia, and he's the same guy that's saying whatever tragedy befell the Indians, it wouldn't translate to genocide. No, the United States and its antecedents have never done anything wrong. When you can project that into the future, since we haven't, we never will. Well, my God. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that what we want to hear? He must be a virtuous scholar. We're not going to investigate his footnotes. He's saying what we want to hear.
Yep.
God help you if you don't say what we want to hear. We're going to get all virtuous, sanctimonious, righteous, and talk about academic standards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Says the guy who never read a book. He bought one once, but then he chewed on the cover and slobbered on it. Okay. That would be, what's his name? Horowitz.
Yeah.
Okay. That preserver and protector of academic integrity who has never in his life published a refereed article. Never once. He's older than I am.
That's
funny. Ran ramparts. Has never been subjected to review by jury of peers, refuses to do it, but he's going to tell everybody else about the integrity of their work of lack of same.
Yeah, it's probably as transparent as the government investigating its actions at Guantanamo.
Yeah, and the FBI are investigating themselves, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's just real transparent.
Oh, it's just all over.
Well, that's who they are. They're investigators, after all. I mean, it's the world's top flight investigative agency. If you wanted to investigate it, who would you get to
who
do
else
it?
Would do
this
it.
Is perfectly
that's
logical.
Right.
Yeah, those guys who don't arrest any rapists. That's
you
it.
Know, when I was a little kid, I sent off the back of a comic book. It had this detective's kit, and I started studying then. I've spent my entire life in this, so I'm going to investigate myself or anything that anybody wants to ever accuse me of doing. Okay. If that sounds plausible to you, then you should be accepting the idea the FBI is investigating itself, okay? And if it doesn't, to the extent that it doesn't sound plausible, I should investigate me. It shouldn't investigate it either. Let's get real about that as well. Oh, well.
Oh, man.
You're not supposed to say things like this. It's just not with a program. What would Chris Matthews say about that?
What would he say?
Hardball. Let me see how soft I can pitch the questions to the right guys.
Boy, howdy. As long as his paycheck is big and fat, that's all that matters to him.
Not to worry.
Yeah, like Columbus said, he was just after the gold.
Well, for the first time in my life, I heard CNBC saying that the Bush administration was in a downhill slide. I couldn't believe that coming from CNBC. They've always been his biggest supporter. And I don't know if it was that particular announcer or what show it was, but I was just really taken aback. I never thought I'd hear that from CNBC, but it was encouraging.
It was encouraging.
Some regular media is making mention of that.
Been in a downhill slide since a little before they were elected. Now that they've jumped off a cliff, we'll acknowledge the slide. You know, I guess when they go splat on the sidewalk, maybe someone will notice they're in free fall.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's cutting edge.
Yeah.
Well, and didn't you write about how the people of Germany were supporting Hitler until his fall? And that's when they really turned and said, we didn't support the guy.
First erosion in the mass support to Hitler. A lot of people who had voted against him, incidentally, they talk about he didn't actually take a majority of the electorate, but a lot of the people who had voted against him once he began to succeed, enthusiastically embraced him. And they continued to embrace him as long as this was this triumphal march of Germany across the rest of Europe, right up until Moscow. And you got the first erosion of support that probably took him back down to the electoral numbers when they had that hard winter there. It really wasn't until Stalingrad, which is 1943, that you begin to see a withdrawal of support. And there's 2 years left before he's dead. So the entire 12-year Reich can be divided into two parts. 10 years of mass support and 2 years of whining and complaining about it being done to Germany, what Germany had done to just about everybody in sight.
Boy, howdy.
And the parallels between then and now by the progressive community are being pointed out regularly, which is encouraging, which is why I went on the air several times asking the United Nations to liberate the torture camps in Guantanamo, liberate the torture camps at Abu Ghraib, liberate all the United States torture camps, because I don't want to be taken to task when the time comes to be said, well, you're an American, how come you weren't there speaking out against this, as happened in Nazi Germany years ago?
So, well, yeah, you could distance a little with speaking out, but you probably got to do a little more than that. I'm not sure speaking out against Hitler was going to do much about Auschwitz or the overrunning of Eastern Europe or any of the rest of that. It's preferable to a wild applause, I'll give you that, but probably a little more was required, and I think the people who are in the receiving end of what the United States is doing have a right to expect a little more of us than simply trying to distance ourselves from genocidal policies. We're supposed to halt the genocide. That's the obligation.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Well, probably not with prayer vigils. That's what I said. Bearing witness to an atrocity is simply being complicit. Now you've got the guilty knowledge. You got to stop. What it is, if you come upon a rape in process, you're supposed to stop the rapist. If you come upon a mugger, you're supposed to, if it's at all possible for you to do so, by whatever means are available to you, stop the mugger, stop the mugging. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to stand there, take notes, light a candle, bear witness, and all the things like that. So it's real interesting. Everybody seems to understand that. Then when it gets to be on a fairly mass scale where it's really, really harmful, they don't know what to do anymore. They turn a virtue into acquiescence. Or acquiescence into a virtue. I guess I said that one backwards. That happens.
I've been talking a lot with my friends. We're bouncing off ideas on how to wake people up. This whole damn world is just driving me nuts right now. I'm getting so sick of all the genocide going on all over the place. And I watch, like I was complaining earlier, I don't know if you heard me, but I was complaining earlier about how shoppers just walk by the homeless, don't even talk to them, nothing. You know, they're our fellow human beings. They don't care about them. And it's like, how do you get these people to wake up?
Well, you put it in their face. It's the only thing I know, and it's imperfect. There is, if I had a recipe, it'd be done. So you just keep probing it. But, you know, examples and opportunities, if you want to look at them that way, come all the time. I get off the airplane. I stop in the men's room in the Portland airport on the way out, and there's a little piece of fecal matter walking through going the other direction on his way to Starbucks to get a designer coffee before he gets on the plane. And he comes over to me while I'm washing my hands with his sick little smile and says, "We're not perfect, but little Eichmann's?" Said, "No, that doesn't apply to everybody. Just those who take offense to it. Like you." Now get out. There's an expletive deleted in there someplace out of my face and out of the restroom for that matter. Okay, go pee on the floor.
Oh man. It's like I've had people walk up to me and say, you know, "Oh, I heard you're against the war." I say, "Yeah." And they, you know, "Well, I'm for it." They're really, "Well, let's discuss some facts then." And I tell them about April Glaspie, the ambassador to Iraq before they invaded Kuwait, giving the green light to Saddam. I start telling them about all the war crimes I've read about in that first war and how illegal it was and all that. And they usually get this blind, just stupefied look in their face, and then they walk off. And then I say, you know, "Hey, if you want to talk about it anymore, just come on over anytime. I'm willing, you know."
If you're really for the war, get your ass over there and fight it.
Yeah. Like Jim Craven says, you know, don't ever support a war you're not willing to take up arms and fight in yourself, because you're asking other people to die or to kill for your beliefs.
And it seems like the American public wants to be ignorant.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, if it's mass hysteria or
We were talking about being uninformed of the media.
I don't know.
If the information is not coming out, you're uninformed, okay? But yep. you've got an obligation to inform yourself. When you've got the information, you refuse to process or deal with it. You get this stupefied look and wander off, okay, because yep. it wasn't convenient information. Yeah. That's ignorance, okay? You're ignoring the information. This is a profoundly ignorant public. There is an abundance of information that they refuse to deal with so that they can come up with this lockstep Sieg Heil endorsement of the slaughter of other people.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. That is Eichmann.
Boy, howdy. Oh, man.
So that's part of the problem, and part of what we have to overcome to end this war is to determine how we can inform people who don't want to be informed, as near as I can tell.
And
they refuse to accept what is in front of them, the truth in front of them.
Well, there's lots of ways to do it.
Yeah, I even recently talked to a woman at a coffee shop, and I was discussing Abu Ghraib. You know, I said, "Yeah, you know, I'm really pissed off about this stuff in Abu Ghraib," and she goes, "Abu Ghraib?" I went, "Yeah, Abu Ghraib. You know, where the Americans are torturing Iraqis." She goes, "No," and I don't think I want to know. I was like, "What the?" You know, I talk about complicity. Understand. You know,
just remember, they're evil. They hate our freedom. They hate our freedom. It's about freedom.
Yeah.
Says the guy that presides over the he's a CEO of the country, which has the largest proportion of its population of any country on a planet behind bars. That's freedom.
And
in Abu Ghraib, that's sort of indicative. Those were all stateside prison guards that were on reserve status that they took over to run it. I mean, they were just doing there what they did here.
Yep.
Somehow or another, people got upset there, mostly because of the pictures, and they couldn't avoid it, okay? But that's what they're doing here.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what those 2 million-plus people are on the receiving end over here is a matter of course, and you don't hear a whisper of complaint in most sectors of this society. You've got some anti-prison or penal rights people out there, but by and large, people say, well, you know, they're there because they deserve it. You know, they're criminals.
Yep.
What about the guys who are ramming flashlights up their butts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Things like that.
What about the
torture? Last I heard, it was a crime. Now, I'll grant you, the guards are in prison. Okay. But not in the capacity they're supposed to be. If you're there because you're a criminal, what the hell is Dick Cheney doing walking around on the streets and Donald Rumsfeld and these other people that are supposed to be,
according to
Nuremberg standards, on the gallows?
Yeah.
The least they could be is in a small cell stamping out license plates or making circuit boards for the greater glory of, who is it that it's for the greater glory of? Some corporation or another this week.
Probably Microsoft.
Probably Microsoft. Anybody out there wearing a pair of prison blues today?
Yeah.
Pay extra for them?
I'm sure they did. And I'm sure the guys that made them did, too.
It's slave labor in a growth industry. Yeah. And you're subsidizing it, and you're demanding more of it.
Yep. Not evil
deeds. Not just going along with it, demanding it. Get the criminals off the streets. Well, hey, that is criminal. You belong in one of those cages you insist they build. Okay? Don't be surprised when you end up there.
Yep. Boy, howdy. Boy, howdy.
Yeah, and with the complicit attorney general who supported the quaint United Nations at Nuremberg, they've just written their new laws, and they can enforce whatever they want as they see them.
It's
a hard battle to fight.
What was it he said that put him in that position? Law's obsolete? Something like that. I'm the chief law enforcement officer of the country, and I find the law to be obsolete. We're just going to have guidelines here. It's a little situation ethic. The question is, who do we want in jail this week?
Yep. Oh, man.
And how do we want to treat them? What works for us? Well, that's what should prevail.
This week, let's take the dying patient, the medical marijuana patients out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
Put them away.
Yeah. Well,
a danger to society.
I've heard from many lawyers that over 50% of the people behind bars are behind there for marijuana offenses.
Yeah.
So, and that's just BS. Everybody knows marijuana doesn't kill anybody. That's why it's illegal, you know.
So really?
It doesn't kill anyone.
50% for marijuana offenses?
Yeah.
I knew drug offenses was very high. I didn't know that much was marijuana.
Yeah, I didn't either. Yeah. I've heard that from several lawyers.
Oh, well, we're very pure in this society. We got strong principles.
Yeah.
You know, the last execution in Colorado, the guy asked if he could have a last cigarette. They said it would set a bad precedent. There's no smoking in these health spas. You can't get medical attention, but anything that might be self-determining, it's for your own good. They actually said that to him. So it'd be bad for your health just before we put you on a gurney and lethally inject you.
Oh, my head's
spinning. You're talking about people who are so damaged, you know, psychopathic is not appropriate descriptor. Mutant might be, but then hey.
So how do we get the mutants out of office, Ward?
Well, we have to get some of the non-mutants to see the mutations and begin to deal with them for what they are rather than pretending that Tweedledee is preferable to Tweedledum. I mean, John Kerry, come on, give me
please.
A break.
Yeah, Jim and I were
and I predicting... still see those bumper stickers. They're proud of them. Oh, I voted for the alternative. Yeah, the guy who said he was going to do the same thing, only more efficiently and better. That guy, the one who sold out VVAW, the anti-war freak. Yeah, him?
Yeah, boy.
That
yeah.
was the alternative? Jesus. Well, excuse me, I'm not supposed to talk about religion on this program, am I?
That's okay. We do it every once in a while.
Okay. Yeah, like the Don't Catholic priest. We talk about them all the time. Yeah.
Right. Well, I guess someone like me, and perhaps you too as well, could be saying, oh, Satan.
Satan.
They're all evil.
We'll get well, that's true. They're Satanists
evil. Evil doers.
You're going to hate
like
your freedom
evil
again.
Evil doers who hate our freedom, which we're receiving less
we
and less of all
freedom,
the time.
Actually, if we had the right labeling
put it in
and
a can.
Put, Rush Limbaugh could front it. We could can some a bottle of freedom and
Halliburton, you know, could
special
sell it
this week.
Halliburton,
sell it worldwide.
We could establish a freedom packaging infrastructure there as economic development somewhere out in the middle of the Qatari Depression. Right.
No, I found it real ironic how they had lost $9 to $10 billion in Iraq. And that was the same claim that in the Cobell lawsuit they were seeking $9 to $10 billion in Cobell, but it's already been wasted down the toilet in Iraq. They can't even account for it. $9 to $10 billion already.
They were seeking $9 to $10 billion in Cobell. That was against loss of as much as $150 billion. So I thought it was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, it was a pretty good deal. So, but the Department of Interior continues to delay the proceedings, and they'll do that into perpetuity if they can.
I thought you went to jail when you were cited for contempt in a federal court. And wasn't the Secretary of Treasury as well as the Secretary of Interior cited for contempt on refusing to produce documents that would allow closure on a case, and that was about 4 years ago?
But didn't some federal judge overturn that lower court decision?
Oh, probably, but wasn't it reinstated by the people? Oh, no, people don't do that.
People don't do that.
No. People don't do anything.
So they're still in contempt, and it's just amazing how they continue to delay it until the people who – the Cobell people are just going to run out of money and time and life and –
Yep, that's what they're hoping.
Well, that's due process. Yeah. That's a big mountain, too. We'll just die them out.
Yeah,
you know, the older people are leading the resistance, and the older people are going to die within 20 years. And what's 20 years? We can just wait them out because there's 40 billion tons of coal waiting for us at the other end.
Like the boarding school lawsuits, you know, they just wait them out. They wait for all the victims to die. We'll just delay it another year. How old's that guy again? No. 86, a couple more years, we'll wait, and then we'll prosecute the case. Yeah,
the interesting dimension on that is the transmissibility of the trauma induced in the schools, because people who come out of the schools in that condition didn't have children, and they raised them, but they're dysfunctional in the process of raising, which passes along the dysfunction. So that one might not go away.
Yep.
And it's actually not that complicated a concept to get across, because a whole bunch of Americans understand it by virtue of personal experience. You know, they've been raised in these good middle American dream houses and have been traumatized by the process, because that's utter dysfunction. So it's not the same dysfunction. It's not the same environment, but the terms are close enough you can make a little translation and they get it. And secretly, they're real pissed off about what happened to them. You know, the sham that's been imposed upon them, the hollow feeling of their lives and so forth. We can work with this.
Yeah.
We can work with this. And maybe in the process provide something resembling concrete therapy where they can get a little closure on what happened to them in the process of acknowledging what happened to somebody else in order to put them in a position that they're in.
Yep.
You know?
This country just drives me nuts.
Well, this country is nuts, so what do you expect?
Yeah, oh, man.
It's just Fruit Loops.
Oh, man. It's like I see it every day. I mean, I see it with my own eyes on the streets. Every day I see these people, and they just drive me nuts, you know?
They once asked Abby Hobman whether he was still taking acid. He said, no, he couldn't stand it. He didn't need acid anymore. Every time he walked outside, it was worse than any trip that he'd ever been on. You know, just the reality of it was so psychedelically looped out. And people were so absolutely detached. They're condemning drugs, but they're running on their own whatever twisted consciousness to end up in places far more bizarre than anything any synthetic substance could do to you. And that's normative reality here.
Yep. Oh, okay. So you working on any more books lately?
Well, yeah, always.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And they're giving me more. They're giving me more all the time.
Lots of material.
I mean, this is going to be. I'm going to write a comedy. Okay.
Good idea.
It's going to be just.
It's going to probably write itself with this administration.
Well, which administration are you talking about? The big George Bush administration?
There's lots of people
writing about that. I'm going to write about these. Gatekeepers and defenders of academic sanctity at the University of Colorado and this illiterate that they put on the Board of Regents to destroy the institution prevailing. Tom Lucero is his name. Just in case we want a truth in advertising out there, Tom.
You heard it. Tom Lucero.
Tom Lucero. Y'all write him and tell him he's just, you know, the greatest thing since sliced bread in terms of higher education. Okay. He can almost spell higher education, but he's got strong views. I'm going to, of course, end up writing that one up.
Right on.
Good.
So was your latest book the one about the boarding schools?
Boarding schools was the latest one, except for the Hawaii Tribunal stuff finally came out. I didn't write that. That's an edited piece. 700 pages edited with Karen Van out of the 1993 proceedings out in Hawaii. So one's out now.
Is that the land claim stuff going on over there? Sovereignty movement?
Yeah, self-determination and sovereignty, self-governance, economy, all of it, which really comes out of the overthrow in 1893. The 8 and the 9 keep getting reversed. I'm dyslexic, sort of. Okay. Can't help it. I can switch centuries.
We've gone through a whole millennium. It's easy to get them confused.
Yeah. That one's out.
What was the title? That one's called
Islands in Captivity.
Islands in Captivity.
Oh, and I'm co-editing with Natsu Saito now, the old Russell Tribunal on War Crimes in Southeast Asia, really. They call it War Crimes in Vietnam. And the Winter Soldier stuff, the VVAW tribunals that were held here. All that stuff is really good and relates to what's going on now, but it's off the radar screen. It's 30 years ago. Nobody's even heard of it. So we're going to just bring it right back up.
Right.
Put it out
through
AK, where the right people ought to be reading and have access to the information.
Good.
And that one should come out sometime in the fall. There's a whole pile. Meanwhile, I am losing a lot of time responding to claims of unpublished sociology professors in West Texas on websites that I distorted my footnotes about smallpox because actually the Indians gave it to the white guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever that's supposed to be about.
So we gave it to Jeffrey Amherst then, huh?
Yeah. Well, this has to do with Fort Clark, but he took off his shoes or boots or whatever it is he wears and he ran out of toes after 10. He said there were no more Indians died in that and, oh well.
I counted.
I counted every toe I had. I counted them three times. It was 30 Indians. There could not possibly have been more that died. That's a gross exaggeration to actually take that list that Thornton puts in his book and penetrate the sloppiness of Thornton just providing you a list rather than the occasional number, assign best guess numbers out of the historiography or demography that applies to each of those peoples that are in the list for 1837-38, and what you come out with is I was low counting, okay? The numbers were potentially far higher in terms of fatalities than what I indicated, and I was wrong about one thing. It wasn't the U.S. Army that did this. It was the Secretary of War. Okay, I should have said War Department.
Yeah.
Mea culpa. I'll rewrite it. It's going to come out lots worse than what I originally said. You know, hey, hot shots on the right. You should have left it alone.
Yeah.
Okay. You really should have left it alone.
Well, maybe they'll learn their lesson.
All this stuff makes me think, bringing it back to the present, makes me think of Colin Powell when he said about the Iraqi civilians killed in Iraq during this last war, that it is not a number we're concerned with.
No, he's not. That was truth.
Yeah.
Give him credit for honesty there.
Yeah, of course, he also covered up the My Lai massacre.
That's where he got his start. He was a light colonel at the time, I think.
Good work for the man there.
Yeah.
Oh, and all these criminals are in Iraq.
But
up
now
there in the government, man.
Now we have Condoleezza Rice.
Ugh.
out there.
Who's actually whiter than Colin Powell. Oh. How come a human being do that to her head? You know, she goes out
does
of her
it take
way.
Take an iron or something? How does she?
How badly do you have to hate
yeah.
yourself to be in the position that she's in? That's really the question before us, and that's really what that comes down to. You know.
Yep.
Yeah. She had to sell out.
Yeah, you have to sell out everybody, everybody, and that's the thing that drives me nuts.
But
about
beginning
this whole
with
government.
Herself, she absolutely despises what she sees in the mirror, and therefore,
boy.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Boy, you can start right there, and the rest of it's going to make some kind of sense. Mm-hmm. And this is somebody we want to tout as being a role model.
One of the greatest Americans, according to Discover Channel.
Uh-huh.
And to Oprah Winfrey.
I happened to catch part of that show, Who Are the Greatest Americans? And the first one, number 34, was Condoleezza Rice. And I almost threw up at that point. Next was... Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, my God.
One of the greatest Americans.
Wasn't he an Austrian?
Yeah.
And
wasn't his daddy
before...
a Nazi or something like that?
Yeah, brown shirt.
That's right.
Brown shirt.
Doesn't he smoke cigars and he even lives in California at the same time? And aren't you supposed to be executed for that in that state?
I heard he smoked marijuana once, too.
But he didn't inhale and he didn't enjoy it and he never did. Oh, no, that was Bill.
So until they got to Sojourner Truth was the next person, the greatest American. Then, now you're coming closer to who you should be looking at, not Condoleezza and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Was Henry
Kissinger
greatest
Americans.
In there?
I couldn't stand to watch any more of the show.
Oh man, I remember
after seeing Condoleezza on there, that was all I could take.
I remember Jim Craven telling me one time he wrote to Who's Who and asked to be delisted because Henry Kissinger was in there and he didn't want to be in the same book with that horrible war criminal, as well as a bunch of other war criminals are in Who's Who book.
I got to replace Henry Kissinger as keynote speaker at something or other at University of Texas, some years back, 5 or 6 years ago at the LBJ Auditorium. But I was actually Kissinger's replacement. There were a bunch of yah-yah about Kissinger and he got in a huff and so he pulled out and so they replaced him with me, which was great fun replacing Henry Kissinger at the LBJ Auditorium at the University of Texas. I can't remember. They had the airport named for some other war criminal. So,
probably.
I was talking about being transported from war criminal airport down Heinrich Himmler Highway to LBJ Auditorium to replace Henry Kissinger. I mean, this is a high point of my life, right?
Oh, yeah. I have a friend that almost got broken when she found out that Henry Kissinger was the first one appointed to the head of the 9/11 commission.
Yeah.
And she's usually up on the news, and it was a couple of days later, and it was mentioned to her, and I just watched her just double over, and for 5 minutes just rock back and forth, come up, her face is all red, going, oh, my God, he's a war criminal.
But it's true. He resigned because he was imminently to be indicted, or they thought he might be indicted. They weren't going to be able to prosecute him, but the indictment might come down on war crimes and genocide or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's why he pulled out of the commission?
Yeah. Three different countries.
This must be an interesting afterlife in public service to be waiting for – you know, the Pinochet effect to catch up with you too. In one sense, you don't believe it can happen. That's hubris. But on the other hand, every once in a while, you know, they took Ceausescu out and shot him against the wall. His own guys did for doing much less than what Kissinger did.
Boy, howdy.
Yeah. So.
Well, it would help if we had a revolt in the Bush administrations. If
well,
somebody
it is revolting,
on the,
you
somebody
know.
On the inside were to initiate... an opening to show us exactly what is going on, where all the lies
are. Let's all pray to John Kerry.
You know, some record of where they said they were going to break the law and indeed did. You know, we need somebody to come out of the closet and bring out that information, the secret
information.
Well,
that would be good, but these guys are so looped up, does it occur to you they might be, and this is a horrifying thought, beginning with lying to themselves, telling nothing but lies to one another in their little memos. It might be a little hard to prove since, you know, George gets up in the morning and writes notes to himself, things to do today, and they're all lies. He's not going to do any of them, and he knows it, but he every morning writes them down. Now, I'm doing some kind of little theater, but it's kind of that way. You've got so many layers of subterfuge and pretext going on here that you've got to be a decrypt analyst even to understand the documents.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to have the whole context firmly in mind to see where they're lying.
Yeah, we don't know how deep the lying is, the extent of lies that
I do believe they lie to
this.
Each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's become fairly apparent.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've been reading the torture papers. And I've read the first like 13 memorandums so far, and my head crinkles the whole time I read these things. You know, it's just like, I can't believe they're actually saying this crap. That, you know, George Bush has executive privilege, so he can take us to war anytime, any place, anywhere. He can violate treaties anytime, any place, anywhere. That makes him a dictator. That doesn't make him the president.
What makes him Adolf Hitler is what it makes him. That was exactly the Ribbentrop articulation of the Fuhrer Prinzip in international affairs. Okay, we didn't sign treaties, or in any event, they're cumbersome now, and we don't agree with them. Therefore, we're not obliged to obey them. Those treaties are constitutive of the rule of international law. What you're saying is the law does not apply to you, but it does to everybody else.
Same argument the Germans used at Nuremberg. We didn't break any German laws. You know, killing all those Jews and gypsies.
No, you're invoking the Kelo-Briand Pact, and you're invoking this and that. We didn't sign any of those treaties. It's like somebody arguing in court when they're brought up on murder charges. I didn't sign the law.
Yep.
Okay. Nobody asked me if I wanted that to be the law, so I'm not bound by it.
Yep. And then when they do sign the treaties, they usually put those exemptions in, especially the one where if you the United States Constitution trumps all this stuff, and it's how the
genocide
United States
convention,
How the United States Constitution is, the torture convention too. They did it with the torture convention too.
And then doing this with the International Criminal Court, we'll gladly sign on and even fund the courts as long as you're prepared to give us a written guarantee nobody with U.S. citizenship will ever be prosecuted in front of it.
It's all protection.
No matter what we do, we can't be prosecuted.
Yeah, it's all protection from prosecution. All these memorandums that I read, they're all basically just saying, well, you know, we know we're criminals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the underlying thing. We're absolutely some of the most horrific criminals to ever have existed, and we just want to make sure that if we ever get, well, towards anything like a prosecution, like at Nuremberg, we want to make sure that, well, we're not going to be in trouble. We're still going to be okay. We're still going to have our big mansions in Texas and wherever else.
And even when they blatantly do it to protect Tom DeLay in this one case where they rewrite the laws, if they're changing the laws to protect the lawbreakers, we're in deep
doo-doo
trouble.
Well, now, just in order to accurize that particular statement, which would be true, except that you qualified it with an if. Take the if out. Now you've got, there's the news.
Pardon me. I did say
we
if.
We are indeed doo-doo.
Oh, man.
It's not how to prevent it, boys and girls. It's what to do about it now that it's done.
That's the one thing. I've always, you know, I hear all these people predicting the future of economic chaos and all this stuff. All the predictions I've heard so far, like in anything from history, predictions, people saying that we're going to be in utter chaos and this and that, haven't really happened. But I feel like something is going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen the way people think it is. But I think there's going to be some sort of economic collapse in this government, something that happened along with the lines of Russia. And I hope people will rise up like they did finally in Yugoslavia the former Yugoslavia after Milosevic did. What was it, 13 years of absolute terror upon the people of Yugoslavia?
Sure.
And Kosovo and everything. And they finally rose up in 2000, man. Just hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. Protesters all over the place beating down Milosevic's cops and getting the cops to join their side even in the military and everything. It's like, how much is it going to take for people to wake up? I'm always saying, wake up, do it now. Resist now. Don't wait until all the horrible crap happens. Do it now. Something, anything.
Well, what I flashed on was a potential for the future was if China wants to bring up the past due bills that the United States owes their country, that we might have to sell off Alaska or something. Or if some other country decides that they want to be the enforcer of the world and take out any rogue nation who does preemptive wars for no cause, you know, that could happen.
I vote for Pongo Pongo to fill that role.
Big old Pongo Pongo. And they have an army of one, don't they?
I'm not sure it's that large, but it's really poorly equipped.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, if there was a civil war going on there, they'd be some U.S. corporation would be equipping both sides.
Like the civil
war in
Iraq.
The result with himself.
Yeah.
That was Big Mountain, David Evans was, the PR firm. John Boynton was the guy's name that represented the coal company, represented the people who owned the coal, and represented the stockholder in the coal company. So it was a triangular sort of negotiation he was engaged in. He was representing all three positions. So.
And he was the one probably who made the most money.
He did quite well, but I just imagine a negotiating session where he sits down in his seat and makes a proposal and he has to run around the table and answer himself and respond and then check with himself in the role of stockholder representative to see if that would be okay. So he's going to be like a marathon man by the time this is over, despite the fact it'll be a short negotiation because the parties were close together, so to speak, to begin with. And you keep running into this kind of, that's the most glaring that I've ever come across, but it illustrates the whole of how this works.
Yep.
Okay.
Just one big, fat, round robin.
Well, yeah, Halliburton negotiating with itself, basically. I mean, they got a senior vice president sitting in the vice presidency of the United States, okay. Gee, I wonder how they negotiated $10 billion worth of contracts without having to do anything. They're negotiating with themselves.
Yeah,
and you can call it on these Chinese walls or whatever it is that they put up to say that it's not really that way. You can call it that all you want. The Chinese wall is like the Great Wall of China. It was breached centuries ago, okay? Dick Cheney negotiated with his own corporation, with the stock that he holds, to enrich himself and to enrich a bunch of them. And if he still has an interest in working when he's done taking this ride for 8 years, he'll go right back into that same vice presidency or a more lucrative one as a result of the services rendered. Okay. That is criminal activity, and that you go to prison forever for. Well, not here.
Not here.
What you go to prison forever for is a $70 gas station stick-up, say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or smoking a
3 pounds of marijuana in desert possession. You know.
Yeah. That allows the real thieves to stand there and wax sanctimonious about it.
Yep.
Yeah. And a prison union to get another wage increase.
Yep.
I'm talking about the guards, not the prisoners. Okay, don't confuse me. The prisoners are getting no wage increase this year.
They're getting
this
no
year.
Union either.
If the cost of license plates goes up, it's not because they're paying the prisoners a larger amount of money to produce them.
But we are building more housing for prisoners all the time. So
well, that's true. It's
a major
industry
now. We have a million people in prison in America.
Two million.
Yep.
A little upwards of 2 million.
More than any country in the world.
And if you go to the Reconstruction Amendments, you find out the only people who can legally be enslaved in the United States are prisoners. And you look at the demography of the prisoners, and you find one in every 3 black males between 18 and 25 or something along the lines of that age range are either in prison, have been in prison, or are on their way to prison. Okay, that's a third of the young childbearing age population is being placed in condition of slavery.
Yep.
You had a fair number of free men in the United States at the time of Civil War. You probably didn't have 2/3 of the black population were free men, but you start thinking about it, not all that much has changed. It's in terms of literal slavery. They just dress it up, and actually, it's more profitable to do it this way because they got the general taxpaying public subsidizing the upkeep of the slaves at this point, where the individual plantation owners used to have to do that, and that was an overhead cost that impaired profit. Now you work for Microsoft, or you work for Prison Blues, or you work for the state, cranking out desks and other office equipment or license plates or whatever it is they've got you assigned to labor for 30 cents an hour, and you have the taxpayers subsidizing the fronting costs of building more facilities. And over the longer haul, you got the prisoners paying for their own imprisonment. Hey, this is way more efficient than the antebellum South.
Yeah.
And they call it progress, Ward.
Well, it is progress.
Civilization.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are, the uncivilized.
It's starting to make Jefferson Davis seem sort of liberal by comparison to the reality that's out there now.
Boy, howdy. It's like one of my favorite things to hear is how, you know, people talk about Thomas Jefferson and Jeffersonian politics and stuff. And I look at them all and I go, but Jefferson wanted to annihilate all the Indians. He wanted to kill off our people.
Well, he did.
And Jefferson also had slaves, so wouldn't he reinstate slavery? And he also, I mean, pardon me. But
he had criminal relations with slaves.
He had certain
uses for slaves.
That's rape, folks. What he did to Sally Hemings was rape. Because unless you're free, what happens to you if somebody has, quote, sexual relations with you and you are not a free person, it is rape. I don't care the context of the situation. What he did to Sally Hemings was rape.
Of course it was.
And it just...
It's institutionalized rape to go along with institutional racism.
Yep.
That was the twin pillar structure. But you wouldn't have had to worry about Jefferson himself, because if he'd said what he said about the government today, he would be in the cell next to Timothy McVeigh. Oh, McVeigh's dead. Oh, yeah. I see. Well,
in the
Jefferson would likely be too. Right. That's how much these guys actually valued Jefferson as he had life today.
Yep.
He would be a target for the Rush Limbaughs and Bill O'Reilly's.
Boy, howdy.
Okay.
That horrible liberal.
They invoked the name, but yeah. Yeah. They would consider him to be absolutely beyond the pale political theoretician and a terrorist to boot. So.
Yep.
Plus, he used to grow hemp on his.
Yeah. Okay, that's one good thing. He would legalize marijuana and hemp. Okay, so that's about the one good thing.
Hell, he might not legalize it because that would undercut the profitability of it. It's worth a lot more if it's illegal than if it were legal. Okay. And he's a good businessman. He got to support his library.
Capitalist.
He sort of. He was a weird sort of capitalist.
Yeah, he was. He didn't really, he didn't die with any money, right? He was in debt, wasn't he, when he died?
I believe he was.
Yeah. Anyways,
well, we got about 4 minutes left in the show, Eugene.
Yeah, so. Don't you have any commercials to run here?
Commercials? We have an underwriter. Forgot all about that.
This is real different than going on CNN. You don't look a thing like Paul Azan.
Someday, maybe.
Okay, I'm not finding the underwriting book. Oh, there it is right in front of my face. That's why I'm not finding it. Okay, this KBOO program has been made possible in part by the KBOO Foundation members, that's you guys, and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Burnside, Northeast Broadway, 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com.
Yeah, that's our commercial for the day.
There's our commercial.
Well, it's good to know. It's very reassuring to hear that happen, actually.
Yeah.
So any closing
more
comments
typical.
before we
we probably go out with some rock and punk band, Indian punk band.
Yeah, probably will. I like that heavy metal bottom on there. That's very reassuring, to know that that's still out there. But, I mean, you say this is listener-supported, so here, to the listeners, I hope you hated every minute of it, because like castor oil, it's the only way it will do you any good. So, later.
Cool. Thanks a lot for coming, Ward. We appreciate
it. Always, always
fun.
Thank
you so much.
And we've got some really good listeners who like to keep informed and support this program. So,
indeed. And one last thing, a little comment.
Come back.
Every time.
The Washington Redskins issue is in the courts still, and there will soon be a decision, of course, against the Indians, I'm sure, as all Indian issues do wind up in court on the losing side, as it were.
Pretty much.
And so,
There's going to be a new law passed by the Republican Congress that requires all professional athletic teams to be named after body parts of Indians. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's go play Nazis and Jews outside, you guys.
Yeah. Okay. Who do you want to be?
I don't know.
Thanks for coming down, Ward.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And,
absolutely.
And for those of you, starting at 5:30, the lectures start at 7, but starting at 5:30 at the Mississippi Ballroom, this wonderful event for infomission.org, and it's at the Mississippi Ballroom, 833 North Shaver. And so I can't find the address, but I remembered it. Yeah, 833 North Shaver.
All right.
And so in honor of the Washington Redskins, here is Mascot by Without Reservation.
They don't have a Chicago team. They don't have a New Jersey team. Or the New York Negroes.
Right.
But you do have Atlanta Braves and Washington Redskins.
Me a Mascot, how you figure? Suckers when we pull the trigger. A Washington Redskin, man, I don't think so. But keep it up, then I'll find you a bull. Hope this war don't play that. Don't make me grab my back and start screaming.
warmth from an Indian slaughter. Don't play me for being a martyr. See, we need to be heard. Hasn't it occurred?
Hell no!
It's Indian Braxton at the highest level. A racist attack disguised as the devil. In a team uniform or logo. If you ask, we say hell no. Who wants to be a white man's mascot? It's not us. Prepare for a bum rush.
Yeah! Prepare for a bum rush coming straight from war. Cause you know we can't take this issue anymore. Try to play us up as a fool or a fiend. Only people still just for us. Makes me wanna ask why they can't hear me. Cause we said it loud and we'll say clearly. No more mascots. Does it take a gunshot to make you deal with the rage that we got?
Don't trip cause it's all about the same thing. Our racist name to play another's game. You don't see other teams. They change fix the kites. This will tell you something ain't right. Singled out, it makes me wanna shout. Is this what American life is all about? To be invaded, degraded, humiliated. You better stop before I have you terminated. No regrets, don't forget about what we're saying. All I have you all on your knees and praying. And we're nobody's mascot.
Yeah, this message comes straight from without reservation. And it goes out to all those stupid motherfuckers who cannot hear what we're saying. Even though we're saying it right to the goddamn faces. I don't know what's gonna take to be heard, but I tell you one thing. What comes around goes around. And if they're down to just us, they better prepare for war.
To prove our point and play a little game. For a mascot, you pick the right name. Which one does it belong? Not like the other. If you pick wrong, I have you running for cover. Is it the lions, tigers, bears, or Indians? It seems very clear to me which one doesn't belong. But for some reason, it's too damn hard for American to figure it out. And we're nobody's mascot. And we're nobody's mascot.
I hope you got it right, punk. If you don't duck, if you pick wrong, you're simply out of luck. You got me pissed off, man. Look in the grandstand. What you see? 50,000 think. And they're me dressed up in the feathers and war paint. Betraying something, something we just ain't. But the crime, the wrong in this betrayal. If people seen everybody think that's me with the tomahawk chop.
Huh.
All I know is that they just gotta stop. If they continue to abuse and diss, their only hope is that I miss. Yeah, this song goes out to the Washington Redskins. Yo, check. This song goes out to the Kansas City Chiefs. Yo, check.